bangthebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, January 17th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. I promise you this is the January 17th show. Two professional handicappers will join me on today's program. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. We'll chat about the conference championship games in the NFC and the AFC. Then we'll talk some conference betting for basketball with the ACC and the SEC. Second half of today's show, Tony George from Doc Sports. We'll do the two NFL playoff games. Then look at a cross-section of the NBA market for tonight with some of a how-to-bet type of introduction for those that maybe haven't bet too much NBA or for those that need a refresher on the things that you want to look for. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks have been updated over there today. Also, Danny Borgs' NFL power ratings updated for today. 58% lifetime with those. He's got some thoughts on sides and totals for the championship games here this weekend. We'll have a UFC preview coming out here shortly. We've got NBA, college basketball on a daily basis. Good stuff coming down the pipeline for Major League Baseball as well, which I'm very hard at work at now. So lots of good things coming your way over at bangthebook.com. Please keep it tuned over there and check out everything that we have to offer. Over on our Bang the Book YouTube page, I actually posted my Thursday three-pack video already here today, so you can go and check that out with my three favorite plays of the day. And as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, up to $500. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino, up to $500. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We'll kick things off with Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
That's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday morning?
I'm doing well, except apparently I don't know what the hell date it is. So, at this time of the year, every day feels like it runs together because we don't have weeknight college football anymore that usually lets me know what day it is.
There you go. And then let's face it, in the wintertime in Northeast Ohio, a lot of days look the same there since you more often than not don't see the sun.
Yeah. Well, apparently you guys haven't seen the sun much either lately. So, joke's on you too.
You know what? No, it's not. Honestly, it's refreshing. I know the grass is always greener on the other side, but when you have 300 days of sun every year, I don't mind a week where some cloud and rain. I love it when it rains here in Vegas. It just the smell, the rain washes away the stench and stuff. I'm actually enjoying it. You know why? Because it's not snow and it's still 50 some degrees outside.
Fair enough. Well, it won't be snowing in New Orleans here for the NFC Championship game, A, because it's New Orleans, and B, because it's in a dome. So we've got the Rams and the Saints here. Interesting to see some line movement finally on the side for this game. A lot of places, 3-20, 3-15, still some 3.5s out there. But yesterday when we did the show, Brad, the market was painted 3.5.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by the movement. I can understand Rams money coming into the marketplace, over the weekend from the LA crowd here in Vegas, but a little bit surprised that the money's coming in, this early. That you got to treat it as sharper money as the limits get, released higher throughout the course of the week. But with that being said, I'm still on the New Orleans side of things, and here's it for a couple of reasons. Number one, I look at the quarterback spot. I get it. There might be some concerns out there for Drew Brees, but I have way more concerns for Jared Goff. In fact, when you're stack ranking the quarterbacks, who doesn't fit with the four teams that are left? I'd argue Jared Goff, particularly Jared Goff on the road this year, much different story. At home, 22 touchdowns, 3 picks. On the road, 10 touchdowns, 9 picks. Much different quarterback. And, even with the injury to Sheldon Rankins on the defensive side of the ball, I still think New Orleans has the better defense. So I got the better quarterback, the better defense, and historically, probably, especially when the Saints are winning, I'd argue that the Saints easily have a top 5 home field advantage in the NFL. and now I can lay a field goal. I know I got to lay a little bit extra juice. I'm going to take the Saints here minus the points. They have never lost a home game in the playoffs under Breeze and Peyton, and I don't think it happens on Sunday afternoon.
So let's play devil's advocate a little bit, though. I mean, obviously you set up a good case for the Saints, and I think that's kind of been the case that we've made throughout the week here on the show. Why is this line moving down? I mean, is there some sort of weakness with New Orleans that you see that is the reason why we're getting sharp money?
I can tell you a couple theories. I mean, look, offensively, the Saints haven't set the world on fire as of late. I thought, you know, one particular case could be made that, you know, that they struggled with those three road games at the end of November and early December at Dallas, Tampa, and Carolina. That's when the weaknesses started showing. Maybe it makes some sense. You got a 40-year-old quarterback at the end of the season and not as good as what he was at the beginning of the season. But really, those are three road games. So I'm thinking to myself, well, what's going to happen when they return home? And they put up 30 on Pittsburgh, and that kind of, you know, I would say a little bit less fearful. But then, you know, Philadelphia last week, I mean, the Saints struggled a little bit offensively. I know they had a couple time-consuming drives, but to put only 20 points on the board was a little bit surprising. I get that, and maybe another context clue. If you go all the way back to the first meeting between these two, the big-time money was on the Rams. Rams closed a two-point road favorite in that game, even though the Saints opened up the week as a small favorite. So I'm thinking a lot of the bigger money is just showing up in the matchup for whatever particular reason for the syndicates. They like the Rams in this particular matchup, even though, I mean, the Saints ended up being the right side in that earlier matchup between the two teams.
I'm glad that that's the direction you went, because that was where I was hoping you would go. That, you know, I mean, that was, what, week 9, I think. And the Rams at that point were 8-0, did suffer that first loss there to the Saints. And, you know, when the Rams did go out on the road and play some decent teams, they certainly did struggle in that type of role. But that's sort of the question here, I think. It's sort of the crux of the argument is, how much does that game matter? How much does that game mean to you? Obviously, the final, you know, New Orleans was up big in the first half. The Rams tied it in the second half. Then New Orleans scored the final 10 points to win by 45-35. How much does that market movement from week 9 matter to you now that we're, what, 3 months beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, 5 points sounds like, you know, a lot. But keep in mind that the Rams were, you know, priced – as the best team in the NFL at that particular point. And we've come out to seeing that that probably just wasn't the case. I remember, I didn't understand that line move back then. I could agree that the Rams at that particular point were a little bit better than the Saints. But I was thinking the Saints would lay, you know, 1, 1.5, 2, and not the other way around. So that was, I do remember that specifically, because that was one line move I just didn't understand. It kind of scared me off of the Saints in that particular game. We found out that, I know, a topsy-turvy game, you know, I wouldn't have adjusted the power ratings too much after that performance, but it's not like I made a major adjustment at the end of that game. You know, what have we seen since? You know, I mean, both teams have, you know, come up in spots that struggled. What I've seen is, if you're asking me who have I downgraded more since, it's been the Rams. I mean, if you look at the Rams against playoff teams, and particularly Jared Goff down the stretch, last three games against playoff teams, I mean, Jared Goff's got a 0-5 touchdown interception ratio. So I've actually downgraded the Rams a little bit more than the Saints since that earlier meeting.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing. I mean, I think Jared Goff to some degree could become the X factor of this game, because, you know, if you're New Orleans, I mean, you have to flood the box here. You just have to. I mean, you've got C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley, both running the football with success, a Rams offensive line that's healthier than it was late in the year. You know, can Goff make those throws? And can Goff make those throws early? And I think that's a really interesting element to this game from a derivative standpoint. How does Sean McVay play this thing? Does he try to establish the run early on because he knows he needs it all game and wants to wear down that Saints defensive front? Or do you try to get Jared Goff some confidence with some easy throws? Maybe this has a little bit more of a frantic pace early on, then it settles in. I don't know, but I think the game flow is really intriguing for this matchup.
It is, and it kind of has me leaning more towards the under here. I know you just had a game between the 245-35, but, I mean, you look at both sides a little bit different from a play-calling aspect. I do – if the Rams, in my opinion, I think are going to go more run-heavy. They'll try to exploit that weakness with New Orleans without one of their better run stoppers up front, even though the Saints are one of the better teams, rush defenses in the league. I expect them maybe a little bit more of the same here as your young quarterback making his first career playoff road start. I think he eases him into the game. That's what I would do, but I guess I'm more conservative than most. That's why I'm not a play caller in this particular spot. But and on the flip side, you know, one thing about the Saints team that's kind of been a little bit surprising down the stretch, I mean, the defense has played at an elite level in the second half of the season throughout the Week 17 meaningless game, and the Saints defense has only allowed 14.5 points per game. So if anything, what leads to my conclusion is I'm also not only leaning with the Saints, but I'm leaning more towards the under, and it looks like the market is starting to come off of that 57 number, only available at some square shops at this point.
All right, so let's move over to the AFC Championship game here. We're painted 3 market wide and mostly 3 flat. I mean, you've got Bookmaker at 3 minus $1.20 on Kansas City. Just about everywhere else, flat, Pinnacle, minus 3, minus 108 on Kansas City, plus 3, minus 103 on New England on my odds screen here. So what do you make of that? I mean, the fact that, you know, any hook that was there early in the week is gone, and it almost looks like New England, a little bit of the preferred sharp side here.
It is, but, I mean, I'm not buying it. I mean, the preferred sharp side last week was against the Patriots, and I didn't understand that whatsoever. It just didn't. And honestly, I didn't really care either. I mean, sometimes you always got to respect it, and you can't win long-term fading it. But, I mean, in isolated games, you don't have to agree with that preferred sharp side other than, I mean, then what are you betting for? I mean, if the sharp side was the right side all the time, then the lines would move significantly. I'm not overreacting to what I saw last week from the Patriots because I thought it was an incredible spot for them, and that's exactly how the game played out. Look, it's tough fading Belichick and Brady in the underdog role, but, you know, I think it's deserved here. And keep in mind, New England, on the road this year, completely different team. At home, they're the best team in the NFL. On the road, I can make a case they're below average. I mean, they're 3-5 straight up and against the spread, and I can make a case as far as covering the number. They're extremely fortunate to cover those 3 games. The Chicago game was misleading. New England had a couple of special teams touchdowns. They had a pick 6 against Buffalo when Buffalo was going to get the cover. And then they had to stop the Jets on the 1-yard line late to prevent a backdoor in that one. So, you look at, you know, expectation being the Vegas line. On the road this year, the Patriots came up short of expectation by a combined 74 points on the road. So that's this year. You know, let's look at, you know, the road in the playoffs for the Patriots. Great run here, but everything's been at home or the neutral in the Super Bowl at last 10 years. I mean, they haven't won a road playoff game since 2007 in January. Tom Brady, at home, playoffs, career, 46 touchdowns, 18 picks. On the road, 8 touchdowns, 8 picks. So completely different team home away this year, completely different team home away for Tom Brady as far as his entire career. To me, even though Andy Reid struggles and has this kind of, you know, a guy that's never won at all against the genius of Belichick, I'm on the Kansas City side.
Are you going to lay the 3, or are you going to wait around for a depressed money line and just go ahead and lay that money line price with Kansas City?
That's a great call. Money line. I think, you know, a little bit, it depends on how low it goes and whatnot. I mean, I'm comfortable laying the 3, but I'd be more comfortable if I get a really suppressed money line because the expectation is the weekend crowd always wants to bet a little to win a lot. And if they can bet a little to win a lot on the New England Patriots in that rare underdog role, I do think we get a suppressed money line. You know, 155 is probably the consensus right now. If I can get a really cheap, you know, like 145, 140, then I'll certainly also have a ticket on that side.
There's been a lot of talk about the total for this game, and really this is, I think the total for this game is about the only thing that's really jumped around between these two games. Was as high as 57, came down to 54, 54 and a half. Now we're back up to 55 and a half. You got any thoughts on the total where the weather forecast is consistently improving?
Yeah, I mean, and that's why it has jumped around. Obviously, weather forecast was, you know, 48 hours ago was really bad, like 5 degrees. And I mean, I know there's stats out there that the market overreacts to cold and all that. But when it's really, really cold, I mean, there's stats out there that I mean, scoring is certainly suppressed when the temperatures are under 10 degrees. But now, I mean, the talk is that it's going to be 20 and still, I mean, that's really cold, but certainly not you know, coldest game in your entire life type of temperature. Probably agree with the market moves here. I get the move on the under earlier in the week, and I get it when the forecast was 15 degrees better than what they're expecting 24 hours later. I get a little bit of the move towards the under. I mean, the over, looking at it, I don't have a significant play right now. If you're saying, you give me a $20 bill and say, where are you going to bet it? I'd prefer to bet the under. I mean, the Chiefs defensively much better at home as on the road. In fact, at home, they're only allowing 17 points per game at home this year. On the road, 35 points per game. They can get after the quarterback. They led the NFL in sacks. Got after it. If they can get after Andrew Luck on that, after that Indianapolis offensive line, I think they can get after Tom Brady here. So I'd lean a little towards the under.
Well, as we look ahead to Super Bowl 53 here, pulling these numbers from Five Dimes just because it's the first place I looked, Patriots minus one over the Rams, total 57.5. Rams minus one over the Chiefs, total 63.5. Saints minus one against the Patriots, total of 53. Saints minus 2.5 over Kansas City, total 59.5. Pretty interesting there that, you know, we've got some some strange splits, I would say.
Yeah, and I haven't even – those are, you know, virgin numbers for me. I haven't looked at them. And those are quite a little bit different than what the Westgate, you know, opened up and offered a few days ago. So, I mean, you're not crossing through any key numbers of three, but you're definitely dealing with a couple points difference. I will say one thing, because I was trying to understand why the Saints, as far as the Westgate lines, were favored over both AFC teams by about 1.5. The other two lines were pick 'em. Keep in mind, the Saints will have a little bit of a hidden home field advantage if they make the Super Bowl. It's in Atlanta and a dome, and they play in Atlanta regularly. So keep that in the back of your mind. I think you're going to see at least the marketplace give the Saints a half point to a point of hidden home field advantage when it comes to the Super Bowl.
I think so, too. I think it's a really excellent point to make there. And you know, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, total of 63.5 for the Super Bowl. If we get Chiefs Rams, I mean, that's interesting, not just for the game, but obviously as we've been starting to talk about a little bit here, very interesting for the prop market as well.
Yeah. And I think that's the, if you're looking for the one that's going to get the most handle, I think the bookmakers would cheer on the Rams KC just because of all the different props being very highly priced there. 63.5. I, you know, if you had to ask me where that would close, you know, under or over that number, I would say over that number. So, yeah, that would be a very. I don't want New England in the Super Bowl just from a fan aspect. I wouldn't. I'd like to see KC in there, just a different team. And I mean, because the props for New England, you know, it's something that we've seen, you know, year in and year out. As long as KC's one side of the matchup, and whether it's New Orleans or the Rams, I think we'll have a very entertaining and hopefully a very profitable Super Bowl if we can get after some of these numbers.
All right, let's talk college basketball here for the last 15 minutes or so of our segment. And I've been trying to do some conference-by-conference breakdowns here because conference tournament's about, you know, 4 or 5 weeks away now for the small conferences and a little bit more than that for the two that we're going to talk about. But we're going to talk about the ACC and the SEC here, time permitting, on this segment. And let's start in the ACC, where you've got, you know, you've got basically, what, almost six top 15 teams. Of course, North Carolina State will drop after that loss to Wake Forest. But you got a Syracuse team that knocked off Duke this week. You got a Louisville team that looks really good. Obviously, Duke, Virginia Tech, top 10 caliber teams. What are you seeing from the ACC here so far, Brad?
There's a couple surprises. You know, NC State, Virginia Tech, a little bit better than expected. You know, a couple of teams that have, you know, obviously taken a little bit of a down turn this season, like teams like Notre Dame and Miami. What I'm seeing, though, is by far the best conference, in my opinion, in all of college basketball. I mean, prior to the, you know, Duke with the injuries there, I think you had at least two of the three best teams, if not the two best teams in Duke of Virginia, who obviously play this upcoming Saturday. I've seen a lot of inconsistencies. I mean, let's take North Carolina, for example, a team that I thought had turned the corner. After they struggled a little bit non-conference, got blown out by Michigan, they went and covered four straight, including an impressive one against NC State. And you're thinking, hey, they turned the corner, and then what happens? The Tar Heels suffer their worst home loss in 16 years under their head coach, Roy Williams, against Louisville. Then you think, you know, that's an outlier. North Carolina had their worst shooting percentage of the season. It happens. The ball doesn't go in the bucket that particular night. I thought, you know, I don't lay double digits too much in college hoops, but I thought it was a good spot to do so against Notre Dame. And yet the Tar Heels struggled the majority of that game, didn't even come close to covering the numbers. So some inconsistencies from one team, but I guess if I'm going to isolate one, it'd be Virginia. I think we're seeing more of the same. Virginia, from a consistent aspect, probably the best regular season team in college basketball last 4 or 5 years. Still going to be some major question marks come March, when it comes to March, and whether they can kick it up an extra gear from a scoring aspect. But right now, it doesn't get any better in Virginia. What they did to annihilating Virginia Tech, their rival, the other night, and I think it's a favorable matchup for them against a beat-up Duke team. I think Virginia is the best team in the country at this point.
All right, so from a betting standpoint here in the ACC, what is it about for you? I mean, are you looking for spot plays then, you know, sort of the letdowns after playing the best teams or the look-aheads, or, you know, are you trying to get a feel for that middle group of, you know, NC State, Georgia Tech, Pitt, those types of teams, and then look for spots to play on them?
That's a good call. I mean, if you're telling me, you know, who do I want to play on coming down the stretch of the season, maybe Syracuse, a win like that over Duke can really turn around your entire season. Maybe they finally live up to their potential. And obviously their zone, I mean, they're as far as the height aspect, they're the tallest team in the country if you're taking their starting rotation. And that might be more of a play-on team at this particular point. Play against for me. I worry coming down the stretch, Notre Dame team that's very depth-shy, even though I think very, very highly of Mike Bray, their head coach. I just think a Notre Dame team down the stretch of the season, very depth-shy, that'd be a concern. But you're right. To me, it's all about spot play. And to me, the unfortunate thing, I thought, you know, for a majority of January and early February, we could make money and maybe still can fading Duke. Why? A lot of people transitioning from football to basketball. They're going to go for the known commodity. And, you know, it doesn't get any more known than Duke when they're sitting on top of the polls. You know, unfortunate that they suffered some injuries. The market, I'll take that obviously and account for that. But I thought you'd be laying some very hefty point spreads with the Blue Devils. And my expectation throughout the course of January, you can make money fading Duke.
Let's talk about Virginia Tech for a second here. I mean, they had that loss at Penn State, and Penn State's really struggling through Big Ten play right now. I know a lot of people liked them a little bit in that game against Iowa, and they just didn't show particularly well in that spot. And then the blowout loss to Virginia. And in between, they played a lot of below-average, really marginal types of teams there. How are you approaching Virginia Tech, who's, you know, really since the Virginia games last year, playing a really different style of basketball than we're used to seeing from Buzz Williams?
Yeah, we definitely are. A team more known defensively, but really it's the offense that's carried them this year. They're in the top 10 as far as offensive efficiency. But you mentioned something that's very important. I still think you can get some value throughout the next couple of weeks. Played a very soft schedule. In fact, if you're going through KenPom's, you know, adjusted ratings, you look at the top 25 teams in there, by far Virginia Tech has the weakest strength of schedule. Where's that going to show up? Well, it'll probably start showing up when it comes to conference play. You know, fortunate for Virginia Tech, they started off with three of the weaker teams in the ACC, Notre Dame, Boston College, and Georgia Tech. You know, is the truth of Virginia Tech more what we saw against Virginia? If that's the case, and maybe when they're playing Wake Forest this weekend, I'm not going to take advantage of it. But maybe I can get some extra value when they're playing teams like North Carolina and Syracuse and NC State coming up on deck in a couple of weeks. That to me, if you're asking me what do I see, first off, Buzz Williams done a great job there. But I would say over the next 5-6 games, my expectation would be that I would more like to fade Virginia Tech than be on top than be on them.
All right, so let's go to the SEC here because I think this is a little bit more complex and nuanced of a conference. You've got Tennessee, who stands out. I mean, they're 15-1 straight up, 4-0 here in conference play. South Carolina 4-0, which is very surprising considering they were 5-7 in non-conference play. LSU still doesn't have an SEC loss. And then you've got Ole Miss, one of the top ATS teams in the country. Kentucky, they already have a loss. Auburn, top 15 caliber team, they have a loss. This conference is setting up to be kind of strange, I think.
Kind of strange, but let's tip our cap. You know, a few years ago, I mean, the SEC, you know, the commissioner sat down with the athletic directors and said, hey, we need to start focusing in and putting a little bit more emphasis on basketball. It can't be just all football for this conference year-round. And from when you got a network, we need to, you know, it can't be Kentucky and everybody else. And that was done maybe more than a couple of years ago, maybe three, 4 years ago at this point. So what I saw was more of an emphasis. You got some really good hires, you know, a guy like Rick Barnes at Tennessee, you know, Ben Holland at Mississippi State. Obviously, Kermit Davis this year at Ole Miss. If you're asking me National Coach of the Year, I'd probably put him up there. From a Vegas aspect, he certainly is. It isn't even close when you got arguably the top ATS team in the country, his new team, Ole Miss. And the team he left, Middle Tennessee, is the worst team in the country against the spread. It started with coaching for me. They started hiring better coaches, more of an emphasis. And what I'm seeing, a little bit, you know, different conference. I'm seeing a very balanced conference, and not balanced that, hey, that there's really no good, you know, really good teams. I mean, you got one elite team in Tennessee, and you know, surprisingly, and the SEC last year got as many NCAA tournament invites as they've ever had before, could break that this year. I mean, I see in my looking at my power rankings right now, as far as, you know, the top 40, I got 7 or 8 teams in there again. So to me, how am I going to attack the SEC? It's going to be more spot play. You know, LSU's been very good at home as compared to the road. A lot of these teams, their home away splits have been incredible. The Kentuckys, the Georgias of the world. So to me, it's going to be more situational than anything, but a very interesting conference nonetheless. And I don't know if I could say that 5-6 years ago with the SEC. The SEC 5-6 years ago was pretty much what the Pac-12, you know, outside of Kentucky, is what the Pac-12 is right now.
Yeah, the Pac-12 is bad. I mean, it's real rough out there right now out on the West Coast. But let me ask you this for the SEC and ACC discussion. You know, one of the things that's really interesting about these leagues is you play all these high-octane games, these ranked matchups, and then all of a sudden you're going to find yourself playing, you know, Vanderbilt or Boston College or, you know, Wake Forest. I mean, we saw NC State trip up against Wake Forest the other night. In terms of the bottom of these two conferences here, which one do you think is better?
Ooh, that's a good question. Remarkable, you know, coming into conference play. I mean, I had South Carolina as the worst team in the SEC. Not been the case there. That's been a surprise. I think the bottom for the SEC right now, and this is stunning to me, is better than the bottom of the ACC. I mean, you look at the ACC bottom, I mean, I'm just not seeing a lot of buy signs for teams like Wake Forest, Boston College, Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh's maybe making a little bit of a run with Capel there in his first year. I think the bottom of the SEC is, in fact, much better, especially if you take into consideration South Carolina making a run. I have every single SEC team in my power rating in my top 100 right now. So no other, I don't think I could say that for just about any conference. Maybe the Big 12, I can say But I mean, you're comparing 10 teams to 14 of the major conferences that have 14 teams in it. The SEC, I think from top to bottom, probably the strongest at this point. There's not a lot of weaknesses there as far as really bottom level teams.
Well, and the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, we talk about spot plays and the elite big name teams are going to be asked to cover big numbers when they play the bottom of the conference. So you know, you sort of want to have an idea of, you know, which of the conference teams can actually step up and play well enough to, you know, give those big boys a scare. And you know, you kind of wonder if that's the SEC or the ACC this year, because we know Duke, Virginia, so on and so forth, are going to lay big numbers, but you know, which conference is going to have the premier teams able to cover them? I think that's what you really want to look for here, because when Virginia and North Carolina play or Duke and Virginia play, there's no value in that number. You got to find the value when it's a good team against one of the lesser teams.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, more, you're just not going to find, I mean, value, you know, from a consistent basis, you know, playing the more name brand teams. And the thing is, the SEC, I mean, very name brand when it comes to football. Not so much, they don't have the same pedigree when it comes to basketball. So, you know, on one hand, I'm at least saying that it's a more balanced conference. And I wouldn't be opposed to you know, teams like Texas A&M, South Carolina, Vanderbilt wouldn't be opposed to you know, playing them in those spots. But on the other hand, this is why this industry can be more, you know, art than science. I'm not always outside of Kentucky and maybe Tennessee this year because they've been so good. I'm not paying the same type of premiums if I want to back the those teams in the top 20 like I do the name brand programs that are in the ACC. So, you know, there can still be some value if you're laying a little bit of a number on the SEC. I mean, Ole Miss, just, you know, prior to the loss against LSU, even though they were the best ATS team in the country, I looked at my power ratings and looked at their last few games, I didn't think you were paying that much of a premium on Ole Miss, despite the fact they were the best ATS team in the country. So even though they're big-name programs and Power 5 conferences, the SEC teams that just don't get that national recognition when it comes to the hardwood.
So I'm looking up and down the Thursday card here. Ton of games. And by the way, as we've talked about already here, a lot of conferences getting lined on a regular basis this year that previously weren't. The WAC, the Big South, the Atlantic Sun, MEAC, SWAC, Southland, all those types of leagues. Got some of those games here tonight, full-on WAC card. Only two ranked teams in action tonight, Michigan State with a tough game against Nebraska, then Gonzaga laying a gigantic number against Loyola Marymount. In terms of these Thursday night cards, Brad, where it's a lot of mid and low majors, I mean, are these the days you like at this time of the year, or do you like the days when the name brands are playing and you can, you know, look to fade some of that perception?
No, I kind of like, you know, Thursday is one of my more favorite days. Because you get a lot of intriguing matchups because a lot of these Thursday games, they're turning around and playing over the weekend. And maybe not the values on the Thursday card, but the result of the Thursday card usually sets me up nicely for the weekend because you get short turnaround, you get teams playing, you know, back-to-back road trips, you know, on short rest. I think whatever happens on Thursday night, I really like to use that to my advantage when it comes to the weekend. But, you know, when it comes to college basketball, because there's, 353 Division I teams, you're always, if you want to have more success than most, pick just a few conferences. And I'd say pick a bigger conference just because, I mean, it's easier to follow. Pick one of those and then pick one of the smaller conferences and know the ins and outs of that. I mean, if you want to have some success. So, on these particular nights, of course, you know, most of the action is going to be on that Michigan State-Nebraska game, and not so much. I don't think a lot of people are going to be wanting to take 23.5 Gonzaga, but I know a lot of sharp people just don't lay, you know, in the 20s when it comes to basketball too much, although they probably should. Gonzaga is one of the best ATS teams in the country. I think there is some value. If you isolate a conference, say the Big West usually is on Thursday, you can find some value, but me, at least as I'm easing myself into this, I like to take the results from this night, and I find even more value on the weekend.
I like that. I really like that strategy. I think that's very, very important because, you know, we've talked about this before too. Road games tend to be grouped geographically. So if you're in Conference USA, you'll play UTSA and UTEP together. If you're in the Sun Belt, I think it's Coastal Carolina and either App State or Georgia State, something like that. So these games are grouped together, and you can get some really good angles going into Saturday. And that's why it's important, even if you don't have a bet on a game, pay attention to the box scores, pay attention to the line moves and what happens. You'll get some ideas for the weekend.
You certainly will. And definitely pay attention to some of the line moves, the overnights, because that's some of the sharper money telling you and kind of maybe giving some context clues to what will happen just a few days from now, unless there's an extreme result. And a lot of times I like fading extreme results unless there was something, a clear reason why it happened. But, Thursday to Saturday, I love handicapping that. So more often than not, I'm diving through every single box score tonight and really finding some value over the weekend.
Are you playing overnights? I mean, obviously you can't release overnights to clients, but you know, from a personal standpoint, are you confident enough right now to play the overnights, or are you kind of waiting for, you know, the market to settle in on game day?
It depends. When it comes to hoops this time of year, I lean on some of the guys that I'm associated with, just because they've been studying more than me. I'm a big time originator when it comes to college football. I do my power rings, and I know a lot don't do 353 all teams, but I start diving in a couple of overnights, not consistently, probably another week or two until I'm consistently betting overnights. But you're exactly right. It's tough giving them to clients when they can't get after those numbers.
Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, if you want to check out the newsletter, again, that's mainly football. Obviously, three games left of the football season. But, you know, if you want to see what I'm all about, or you just want to see, hey, you know, this guy sounds like he can talk a good game, but let's see some of the work that he does. Just go there. You can download all past issues of my newsletter. I can promise you, you won't be at least disappointed with the amount of info that I put into that. Now, as far as basketball goes, I don't do a weekly newsletter when it comes to basketball. What I do are daily VIP updates, where I write up a few games, tell you what I'm betting, tell you some of the bigger games where I would lean. That's a little bit of a different price point when you're talking daily. Newsletter for the rest of the year is $29, covers you through the Super Bowl. VIP, as far as college hoops, $299 all the way through March Madness and the National Championship game. Check me out, bradpowersports.com.
And as always, you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Sounds good, my friend. Take care.
There you go. There's professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. And again, at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. We got one more guest here for this Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Tony George from Doc Sports. Tony, how's it going today, man?
Good, man. Good. Ready to get it going here. Big weekend in the NFL, obviously, championship Sunday, and of course, big slate of college basketball games. Still trying to figure out college basketball this week. Having a rough week in college basketball, and a lot of road teams. Both road teams. The Big 12 won last night, and I was on one of the home teams, and so. Kind of scratching my head this morning, getting that figured out, and the NBA's rolling along real well for me, so a lot of stuff on my plate today, buddy.
Yep, and we'll do the NFL and the NBA here on today's segment, and, you know, Tony, before we talk about these two games specifically here, I got to say, you know, something that does make me happy about this is I think the four best teams are here. These should be two very good games, totals in the mid-50s. This is what it should be, I think, as opposed to last year. You know, Jacksonville had the great defense, but no offense to speak of. I think this is what we all wanted to see.
Well, if I did a video, and I do these videos on YouTube. We talk about them on here all the time. I do an NFL opening line report, and I just kind of raw and candid take for about 10 minutes on just initial reactions. And one of my comments was this: if this was college football and this was the BCS championship, you know, Final Four, nobody be bitching, because these are the best four teams. in the NFL, bar none. You probably have four of the top six coaches in the NFL coaching in these games. You've probably got, you know, a lot of the offensive and defensive coordinators are some of the best, you know, in the NFL. Sean McVay obviously doubling as the offensive coordinator, and Andy Reid co-offensive coordinator. You've got great special teams. You've got a lot of home field advantages you could talk about. Everybody deserves to be here, and everybody also needs to know that you have two underdogs that could both win outright on the road this weekend. So it's a real tough call on these games. No one's going to go crazy on these games. If you do, you're crazy. But you got exactly what you wanted. You got four of the best knocking heads this weekend, and it's going to come down to a few penalties, a crucial turnover, maybe a special teams blunder that's probably going to decide them. It's really that close, Adam.
Well, and I mean, that's why we see these lines sitting on that key number of three, basically implying that these teams are all pick 'em or around there on a neutral field. 3-point home field advantage for both teams here. Maybe you could make a case for 3.5, I think, for New Orleans in the Superdome. But now this line is mostly three out there. What do you think about this number coming down off of 3.5, Tony?
Well, there's some future. I think a lot of the play into the Rams games, there's some futures money, and books want some extra money on the Rams. I actually think it's cheap. I will disagree with you, well, just slightly by a half a point. I will give, without question, and I do give New Orleans a 4-point home field advantage in every game. They're that good in there. You've got the line drop down to 3 at BetOnline, CG Technology, and William & Hill this morning all have New Orleans at 3. They've taken the hook off. You're not going to get any movement on the Kansas City line whatsoever. They're not going to give New England, you know, a hook, you know, in a championship game like this when they're already an underdog. That is not going to move. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm a little at the end of the day, the value, you know, lies with the home teams here. I mean, you know, if you look at New England, Adam, they struggle on the road. They've got losses to Miami, the Lions, the Jags, the Titans on the road. Brady has not been, they haven't protected him well on the road. They're 0-3 in AFC championship games on the road, their last three. You know, Kansas City is a full 3 points home field. If you've never been to a game in Arrowhead, and I've been to probably 50 of them over the years, I lived in Lincoln, Nebraska, and then Kansas City the last 12 years for moving out here. I've been there many times. It's more like a college atmosphere than anything that I've ever seen in the NFL. And I've probably been to 20 NFL stadiums to NFL games over the year. And it's a distinct home field advantage. You know, I don't think the refs are going to be so much. I mean, you say New England gets breaks with the refs, and they tend to at home a lot, not so much on the road. So that's a little bit of a disadvantage for them, you know. Yeah, but, you know, you got the old, you know, when it comes to the Kansas City and New England game, you know, you've got the most experienced quarterback pretty much in the NFL. Maybe the greatest of all time, probably the best zone passer. You know, if Kansas City was to man them because they don't have a downfield threat and man up on defense, you know, and not give Edelman everything underneath, I will tell you that, you know, New England's going to have a really tough time beating Kansas City because Kansas City is going to score points. There's no doubt about it. And while Patrick Mahomes is not Tom Brady, I don't care all the hype. Everything you've heard about him all year long, he's a magical player. If he remains healthy, he's going to be one of the better ones around, you know, for years to come. But at the end of the day, he's not that much. He's played better than Brady this year, if you look at some of the numbers. But at the end of the day, you still got Brady and Belichick, and that's going to give people great pause to lay 3 with Kansas City, especially with Andy Reid coaching. But the one point I wanted to make, pardon me, and I'll get your feedback on this as I'm nursing kind of a head cold here, Andy Reid in the playoffs, we all know what the story is. Belichick beat him in the Super Bowl 24-21 when he was coaching the Eagles. But at the end of the day, Andy Reid has changed his coaching philosophy this year. He is not sitting on it. Bear in mind, Kansas City had a 21-3 halftime lead last year in the playoffs and lost because he sat on a lead and tried to protect it. He wasn't aggressive. He hasn't done that this year. He has the type of team he doesn't need to be aggressive. He has the type of offense you're not going to put the reins on Mahomes. He's a playmaker. He's got playmakers all over the field. They got the biggest playmaker in the NFL in Tyreek Hill, and I think that's a huge advantage for Kansas City is that Andy Reid has kind of changed his coaching philosophy a little bit. And if they were to get up 14 points for some reason or another, they're not going to sit on it, Adam.
Well, and that was something you isolated early on in the season about Andy Reid and how, you know, he had changed his spots. And that's a good thing for a veteran head coach like that. Maybe it's because he has Pat Mahomes instead of, you know, instead of somebody like Alex Smith. And, you know, maybe that does kind of play itself out here a little bit in this game. So I guess my follow-up question to that, Tony, would be, it sounds to me like maybe you like the total a little bit in that AFC championship game.
Yeah, don't let the weather fool you. It's obviously going to be cold. I mean, my wife's one of those weather bugs, and she's homesick moving from Kansas City, and she basically gives me an hour-to-hour update on a daily basis of what the weather's doing back home. So I know what's going on there. They're going to get a bunch of snow. Then it's going to subside, and then they're going to get an Arctic blast with a lot of cold air. I don't think the wind's going to be at a high rate on Sunday. You never know with the weather until it actually is there, but you want to keep an eye on that. But, you know, at the end of the day, both these teams are going to score. But the one thing that is that, you know, when I've harped about it on your show, Bob Sutton, he's not one of the best defensive coordinators in the league by a long shot. But what they came up with last week, if you look at the Colts, they had no meaningful yards whatsoever when it counted. Everything they got was in garbage time. I think the first down they got was on the last drive of the first half. They went into a pre-bid defense, and they let them go down the field there with less than a minute left, and then Vinatieri missed a field goal. And then other than that, it was the end of the game when Kansas City already had to put them away. And the other thing of note, when you want to pull the trigger on the total, Adam, the last five opponents that have came into Arrowhead Stadium with what you hear all over ESPN and NFL Network and Fox Sports, one of the worst defenses in the NFL, the last five opponents that came into Kansas City scored 14 points or less. And that's something to take note of for sure. But do I think it's going to be, could it be a 35-31 game? Very well could be. I don't think, don't let the weather, you know, unless it's going to be blowing 25 miles an hour, you know, and there's going to be flurries, then maybe the under. You want to take a look at this total closer to game time when you have a real accurate forecast. But Kansas City does one thing, and they do one thing very well. That's put points up on the board. They can go five plays, 90 yards, and put seven up in less than a minute at any point in time because they've got a quarterback and they've got a wide receiver. They've got a tight end, and now they've got Sammy Watkins back. All those players on Kansas City's side of the ball pretty much are better than what New England's bringing to the table right now, especially when they're on the road.
All right, so let's transition to the NBA here, a much different market than the NFL, but we haven't talked a whole lot of NBA here lately, so good time to do that here with you, Tony. I want to talk about how to bet on the NBA using some examples of games that we, you know, see on a daily basis and see if we can help our listeners out a little bit here with this. So I want to start with the first game on TNT tonight, game 543-540, Philadelphia 76ers taking on the Indiana Pacers. Premier matchup, billing on cable television. So this game gets a lot of action, gets a lot of interest. What's the starting point for you with a game like that, Tony?
You know, it all comes down to scheduling and strength of schedule in the NBA and, you know, the last five game stats. You know, it's right here, right now in the NBA. There's 80-some games every year, just like Major League Baseball is 160. So teams get into cycles, you know, good cycles and bad cycles. It's very cyclical, you know, and they get into ruts or they get into good grooves. And there's really no gray area in between here. But when you take a look at when you take a look at this game here, you know, in my opinion tonight, and I'm not going to have any action on this, I think the wrong team's favored. You know, you've got the Pacers at home. Both, they're second in the Central. Philadelphia's second in the Atlantic. But you take a look at recently here, first of all, who's playing with revenge? You know, well, Philadelphia went in here and beat Indiana 100-94 back in early November, and then Indiana returned the favor against Philly in early December, mid-December actually. But remember, Embiid was out for that game. They went in and beat them by 12 points in Philly. So they got a little revenge factor here. But you take a look at, you know, Indiana. And Indiana, I will give you this, they do play some defense. They can play, when they want to play defense, they're very, very tough to beat. But you take a look at who they've beaten here. They've beaten Phoenix, you know, at home. They beat the Knicks. Then they played a good team in Boston. They lost to them. Then they played Cleveland. They beat them, bad team. Then they had to play, I'm just going back to schedule in reverse. Then they played Toronto. They lost to them. Then they beat Chicago and Atlanta and Detroit. And then Atlanta again, and then Washington. They've played a bunch of teams that are 500 or below here, and you got a team here that's coming off a 42-point butt whipping, you know, at home against Minnesota here, and they're clicking on all cylinders right now. And I like this spot. You know, one thing, you take a look at Indiana, you know, offensively, they got Oladipo, and that's about it. Now, I like Philadelphia. I like their scoring across the board. Their starter points, you know, the one – now, Indiana goes to their bench a lot. They're getting 40 points a game from their bench the last five versus Philly at 34, so they're 6 points less on the bench. However, you're getting 14 points more a game out of your starters with Philly than you are with Indiana, and you also got a rebounding edge here with Philly. And I like Philly in this spot just because Indiana has been beaten up on a bunch of weak sisters, and I think Philadelphia is a much better team right now.
All right, so you mentioned that you think the wrong team is favored here, and from what it looks like to me, this is a basically pick'em game on a neutral with Indiana getting about 2.5 points of home court advantage. What is home court advantage worth to you in the NBA?
A couple. You know, there are certain places, you know, I'll give Utah and Denver because of the elevation. I usually give them 3 points. I give them more than that, especially if they're playing like an East Coast team traveling west. We're going to talk about one of these games, a West Coast team traveling east tonight, you know, in your next segment here. But, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of these home floors, you look at a lot of these games, these stadiums are half full, three quarters full. It's not like you're playing at Cameron Indoor. It's not like you're playing in East Lansing, Michigan, you know, or Lincoln, Nebraska tonight, sold out for the Michigan State game, you know. You don't have that huge home court advantage. There are some, you know, some teams that pack the rafters, you know. Boston does, for instance. But there are very few teams that really have a distinct home court advantage, you know, more than a point, point and a half, just for playing at home. But it changes once you start looking at scheduling. So it's deeper than just what you're saying, face value. You know, if Philadelphia was on the fourth game in 8 days on a four-game road trip, or 6 days, playing their fourth game in 6 days on the road, then home court becomes an advantage. You know, Philly played at home, had a day's rest. Now they're coming in, they're playing this game tonight. So the home court advantage goes down significantly based on the scheduling.
All right, so to recap here, all things being equal with the spot, with neither team in a really terrible spot, you're looking at, you know, basically a couple points home court advantage, and you want to look at the recent results over the last 5 or 10 games, see who they've played, who they've beaten, how they've fared. Now let's talk about a game that you just mentioned with a West Coast team coming east, 545-546, Sacramento and Charlotte. Yes, Sacramento coming east, start a road trip. Charlotte, first home game back off of a long road trip. So how do you sort of weigh those two spots against each other?
Well, one thing involved here, Saturday, Sacramento played Charlotte. I had a 7-unit game of the month top play on the Kings. Based on what I just told your listeners, they had played Denver, Phoenix, Clippers, Portland, you know, and they lost to the Clippers and the Portland going in to play Sacramento. That was their fifth game in 8 days, you know, and amazingly, they went into San Antonio 2 days after they, I think it was on Monday, and beat the Spurs. Tony Parker going back home. Obviously, the Charlotte's head coach was a Popovich assistant coach for years, so he was kind of homecoming for him. And they really dialed it in there. Shocked me that they beat, you know, as a 7.5-point underdog at San Antonio. But Sacramento right now is kind of under the radar. People aren't paying a lot of attention to Sacramento. They're two games over 500. You know, they're putting up a lot of points. They're 27-17 on over and unders this year. They've got a lot of good players. Do you really want to get in front of them? You know, when you take a look at them, they've beaten Portland. They beat Charlotte. They beat Detroit. They've beaten Orlando. They played Golden State within 4 points at home. You know, they've kind of been hit and miss here. At the end of the day, though, it's only the first game of the road trip. You know, I will tell you this much. What concerns you the most when you look at the stats, last five games, which we're looking at, Charlotte is scoring 105 a game and allowing 113. That is their average margin of loss their last five games is 7.2 points, while the average margin of win for Sacramento their last five is 7.4. But Charlotte is negative 7.2 here. You start looking at the numbers that count, you know, in this game, although the road scenario exists here, you can't ignore better field goal percentage, better three-point percentage, more rebounds by a mile. And that's one thing that they do very well is they rebound the ball very well. And you're getting more bench points out of Sacramento than you are Charlotte. You know, I know it's a road trip, but it's only the first game of a road swing for them. And they've had a couple days to get ready for this. You know, the whole world's going to be on Charlotte tonight, without a doubt. They're 14-8 at home. They got everybody back. Lamb's back. Everybody's back. They got Walker. They got some good players there. But until they shore their defense up, I can't lay points with them, Adam.
All right, so then one more game to touch on here, 547-548, Phoenix and Toronto. And as I mentioned in my notes to you, Tony, and as I mentioned in my situational betting article in the beginning of the week, this was a flat spot for Toronto. This was a very flat spot coming off of the Boston game last night. As it turns out, Kawhi Leonard's going to sit tonight, and Kyle Lowry's going to sit tonight. So for anybody that played the overnight on Phoenix, kudos to you for getting some line value, but I think that's a good, you know, example in and of itself that when a spot looks this bad, maybe it's not a bad idea to play the overnight and hope you get a scenario like this one.
Yeah, you do. They're coming off a loss at Boston. They're probably going to rest some starters. Although the rumor was yesterday, it just goes to show you the rumor mill and information that NBA teams put out. This is a game you're going to want to wait and see for sure. But Golden State was going to rest their starters last night too off a big win the night before. And they brought them all to the table, you know. So that was the rumor going into that, you know. That was a flat spot for them anyway, coming off a huge win, and they managed to push at seven. But, you know, Phoenix is playing a lot better when Booker's in there. I mean, obviously he makes everything work down there. And, you know, I don't like giving Phoenix double digits anytime simply because they can put up points. There's no doubt about it. Now, they're coming off – plus – Phoenix is coming off just a total butt-whipping. You know, they got beat by, 34 points at Indiana here 2 days ago. They've had a lot of time to sit around and think about that. And they haven't fared well on the road. This is only their third road game in 11 games here. Their last two road games, they lost at Dallas, which Dallas has a strong home court. They beat Denver after that by 9 points at home, which is impressive. You know, catching 8.5. And then they lose, you know, they win by 17.5 points over the spread margin in that game. Then they turn around and lose by 23.5 against Indiana, who just played some good defense with them. But as I look now, you know, if you'd got the overnights on Phoenix, knowing that they were going to rest their starters, you're definitely going to make out here because there'll be some points put up here. Plus, the scheduling spot for Toronto, as we talked about, is so important. And, you know, right now, William and Hill and Westgate right here in Las Vegas have pulled this completely off the board. Offshore, you still catch 13. I was going to look at my live lines here real quick since I got my computer up and running. And they have currently, it's dropped from 13 to 8. So you've lost 5 points of line value if you waited to bet it. You still catch 8.5 right now at MGM. Westgate just opened it up 3 minutes ago at -8 and 222.5. So, you know, I still think there's value, though, with Phoenix +8. Remember, this is not 8 points in – 8 points in the college in the NBA is like freaking, you know, 8 points in the NFL. That's a ton of points between two pro teams here, and you know, Phoenix will bring it. Have no doubt about it. I don't know how excited Toronto is going to be about playing tonight. You know, obviously, just remember though, second stringers in the NBA are still ballers. Nobody's sitting on the bench in the NBA that is not flat out a frickin' baller. They all can get in there. Are they as good as, you know, Leonard and Lowry? No, but they're not shabby. So it'll be a good ball game there tonight. But the value still lies with Phoenix, but the great value overnight definitely lies with them.
Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports. What's going on over there right now, Tony?
Well, I got a doubleheader tonight in college basketball off an 0-3 night last night. I always tell it like it is, Adam. I got skunk last night in basketball. Free plays all won, go figure. But at the end of the day, got to bounce back tonight. Big game between Nebraska and Michigan State in the Big Ten. And then a small conference hidden gem where actually one team is favored and shouldn't be, and they're even at home. And somebody's going to come up and bite him in the butt tonight. So we got a doubleheader there. And an NBA. I've been playing a lot of NBA first half lines this year. As a matter of fact, we talked about it on your show last week, Adam. I've only lost one first half line in the NBA this entire season. And we have a first half line play tonight in the NBA. And, of course, Championship Sunday cards will be up and here later today, 5 o'clock Central. So, you know, get over to Docs and check it out. Follow me over there on YouTube with my daily free plays and tell you like it is each and every day over there and what's on deck. So sure and get over there and check out the YouTube page as well.
And you can also follow Tony on Twitter at TGeorgeSports. Tony, appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much for those NBA breakdowns. We'll talk to you again next week.
You bet, Adam.
There you go. There's Tony George, professional handicapper, exclusively over at Docs Sports. Coming up tomorrow on our edition of Bang the Book Radio, we're going to have Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com and also bangthebook.com. We'll chat some college basketball, come up with a couple of conferences to discuss with him. We'll also talk with Christian Pina about the UFC event here this weekend, and we'll chat with Brent from DSI Sportsbook for this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I will talk to you again tomorrow.